at freakradio.org in Santa Cruz is the June 6th, 2019 show coming at you tonight. Lots of bits and pieces. Some reading from the Indie Bay website about the death of Kevin Allen in police custody. Some interviews and, well, stick around and you'll hear what comes.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Let's jump right into the Santa Cruz Indie Media story at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, in case you want to read it yourself. I'm not going to read all of it. There's a lot of commentary. And I'd hope to talk to, and still hope to talk to, Kevin Allen's sister, who I'm trying to get a hold of, but it's short notice, and that might not happen on this broadcast, or ever, for that matter. But I think there are a few quotes in this article. The article reads, family members believe man who died in police custody was denied proper medical care by Santa Cruz Police News. And I'm not sure who that is. It's sounds like a lefty police critical group, of which I am one in that sense. On June 1st, 40-year-old Kevin Allen died while in custody of the Santa Cruz Police. An SCPD press release states officers were responding to a report that a man had fallen to the ground near Water Street and River Street in Santa Cruz when they found and took Kevin Allen into custody and transported him to jail, claiming he was intoxicated. Once at the jail, medical staff there determined Allen would need to be taken to the hospital, where he was pronounced dead after suffering cardiac issues on the ride over. Community members have questioned why Allen was not given medical attention immediately instead of being arrested, and if that delay by Santa Cruz police contributed to his death. Family member Kerry Allen Patrick posted the following statement on Facebook on June 4th. This man was my brother, Kevin Allen. I believe the police failed to give him proper medical attention because he was a known homeless alcoholic. Be careful out there, people. The article continues, Kerry Allen Patrick's concerns about the profiling of her homeless alcoholic brother, Kevin Allen, by the authorities seems to have been confirmed by Santa Cruz Parks Ranger Jeremy Matthews, who posted on Santa Mierda, a local hate blog, that Kevin Allen was a, quote, drunk. Matthews, who posts on social media semi-anonymously as Jeremy Cashews, is assigned to the Rangers Division, that is, under the management of the Santa Cruz Police Department. He's also the son of Cynthia Matthews, I believe. These rangers are armed and tasked with enforcing laws in the urban and parkland area of downtown Santa Cruz. The author of the Santa Mierda hate blog has posted vitriolic comments about Allen and his alleged criminal past and has removed at least one comment critical of the police. The way I read it, he was in distress and should have been taken to the hospital before jail, a Santa Mierda commentator wrote about Allen in a now-deleted comment. The greater community, however, has spoken out on social media in support of justice for Kevin Allen across a variety of outlets. Here are some of the statements different individuals have made. They took him to jail, then to the ER. He was semi-conscious at the jail. The medical staff sent him to the ER where he died. He should have gone to the ER first. Did you read the article? It's pretty clear he was down when they found him and took him straight to jail. It's pretty clear we don't know if he would have lived had he went to the hospital first. He died on his way to the ER because they needed to book and prosecute him first to make that money. I met Kevin when he was in custody through my job. He had a great sense of humor. I am so sorry. These are all separate comments. So now the cops are trying to put this murder on someone else. Video cameras and witnesses are not needed when they made a huge mistake. First, take him to be evaluated by the doctors. Mental illness is a big problem for a lot of addicts. I heard they medicate themselves whatever they can get. The cops need more training. Hope they can find the family so they can file a lawsuit. I think that if they found someone who fell, an ambulance would be called first and foremost before jail. If he was unconscious, why wouldn't they call an ambulance? Sometimes cops should be carefully if they are okay before making any arrests. The press release issued by the Santa Cruz Police Department on June 1st, the story continues, concerning Allen's death, states, on Saturday, June 1st, 2009, officers responded to a report of a 40-year-old man who fell to the ground in the area of River Street and Water Street. Members of the Santa Cruz Police Department arrived and contacted the subject. During their contact, they determined the person was under the influence. Officers placed the male into physical custody and transported to county jail. Prior to being processed into the jail, the person became semi-conscious and examined by jail medical staff. It was determined the subject would need to be seen at the hospital. Paramedics arrived on the scene and transported him to the hospital. While being transported to the hospital, the male began to have cardiac difficulties and was pronounced dead at Dominican Hospital. The Santa Cruz Police Department is working with the Santa Cruz County District Attorney's Office, the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Forensic Unit, and Coroner's Office. All agencies will be working towards determining what happened. A review of body-worn cameras, interviewing all witnesses, and other forensic evidence is being processed. That's the story from the police. And the critical cover story reads and continues, the press release raises important questions. If the police were called because Allen had fallen on the ground, why was this health issue and crisis treated as a crime? Why was Allen taken directly to the main jail and not to the hospital? Is the Santa Cruz County Jail's medical staff, who are employed under private contract with the Monterey-based company California Forensics Medical Group, CFMG, fully prepared to receive individuals who are undergoing medical emergencies as soon as they enter the jail facility? And there's a statement from Carrie Ann Patrick posted on the group Santa Cruz County Homeless Advocates, which has a lot of interesting and I find often useful commentary on and news about homeless folks. This man was my brother, Kevin Allen. I believe the police failed to give him proper medical treatment because he was a known homeless alcoholic. Be careful out there, people, which, of course, I've read before. When I went to Carrie Allen Patrick's website, by the way, this post was not there. This is a post that's under KION546.com, Man Dies in Police Custody in Santa Cruz. Which I wonder about. I mean, it's her brother. Did she put the post and then remove the post from her own Facebook page? Was something happening there that persuaded her to be quieter about the subject? Maybe she didn't make any posting, but somebody else posted this issue, quoting her. I don't know. I mean, perhaps I'll learn more and be able to pass on the word to you. It sounds like, though, there is a case of a homeless profiling here going on, in the sense that the individual is being taken to jail for what's a relatively minor offense when there's a life-threatening situation for him, because perhaps they knew he was a homeless alcoholic. I mean, that's one interpretation of what happened. And it's a pretty sad, sinister, but unfortunately likely interpretation. Again, I'm someone who doesn't know the circumstances, hasn't gotten any more information about it than reading a website that's admittedly critical of the Santa Cruz Police Department, but perhaps justifiably critical. So in other news, for the first time in my memory, one of our weekly HUF Conscience in Action meetings, that's two groups, Conscience in Action first, and then HUF, meet at the Sub Rosa every Wednesday starting at 11, going off until 2 or 3. It's a long meeting. The Conscience in Action meeting was interrupted when a resident of 1220 River Street, Greg, advised us that police were at that moment rousting folks who had their tents and property along Coral Street near the railroad tracks, apparently something that is quite a regular occurrence. But we decided we'd hustle on down there and do some interviewing and some photoing. And part of this has to do with the ongoing lawsuit that a number of the Ross Camp residents, I can call them, I guess, the Ross Camp refugees now, are filed a month or two ago against the Santa Cruz City for its destruction of the Ross Camp, placing those there in much greater danger than they were at the camp, with the false claim that there was adequate shelter, alternate shelter for them, which, of course, there wasn't, hasn't, and ever been, and has been an ongoing lie by the city's well-paid professional mouthpieces of Martin Bernal, the city manager, Susie O'Hara, and formerly Tina Scholl. Tina's moved on to bigger and worser things up in Scotts Valley, or I guess she's new. She's either the new city manager up there or connected with the government up there, but she's abandoned her post here. Probably for a better salary, who knows? I can't speculate there. And there's a new woman, I think Laura Schmidt is her name, who's the new assistant city manager. Very important post, because these are the people who are really powerful voices at the Santa Cruz City Council. They supposedly do, and at least present, research supposedly done on homeless issues that essentially are the justification for the money grabs that the city council does from the local governments, whether it's sharing with the county or getting from the state or, I don't know, from the feds as well. My strong point has never been the specifics of all these grants, but I have noted the wildly optimistic, if you want to be kind, shelter claims of O'Hara and Scholl, as well as their collusion with almost unabashedly, openly anti-hostile council members, staff members, and organizations, created groups like the task force, the public safety task force, or I called it the public hysteria task force, which essentially used police stats about camping as a crime, which it's actually not anymore because of the Martin versus Boise decision. But it was, and it wasn't then either, because of the necessity defense in court, because hasn't been, and probably never will be, adequate shelter for homeless people until a large segment of the population decides to stop funding a very, very small portion of the population that's very, very rich. And that's how it kind of proceeds, and their foreign wars, adventures, and power plays. When we, from these Conscience and Action meeting, got out to the Coral Street area, and to folks' credit, almost the entire meeting, of whom there were about 10 or 12 people, packed into cars or hopped on bikes and got over there. And we interviewed a few folks, and I'll play a few of those interviews. They're not very exciting. They're not very different from the other interviews that you hear me play regularly on the show from the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal Church meal every Monday, or from the streets, or from the Food Not Bombs meal, where I regularly show up to catch accounts. But again, part of the whole purpose of this was to encourage people to make declarations under penalty of perjury to the courts, and it was specifically the court case, Drake Quintero and others versus the city of Santa Cruz, for the destruction of and the loss of property at the Ross Camp, in the hopes of, well, getting a little justice for the people whose stuff was stolen, but actually creating a greater background or vista or more accurate picture of what is going on in the homeless community and in the broader Santa Cruz community, as a small number of powerful agencies and people and community groups are able to manipulate a growing homeless crisis into essentially a political power play. This was a power grab a few years ago at city council, where people like Hillary Bryant, Lynn Robinson, the old-timer Cynthia Matthews, David Terrazas, Rochelle Naroyan, a whole bunch of pretty much out-front anti-homeless bigots, but they don't, of course, so label themselves. They claim that they're providing smart solutions to homelessness. You see this with the poverty pimps, who are a bit to the left, at least in terms of not wanting to close down homeless services directly, but rather to tighten them up, get more money for them, but provide essentially for a very small pool of homeless people, and particularly in terms of the most basic item, which is shelter or housing, or being left alone to provide your own shelter or housing when you don't have any kind of options, which is, of course, the situation for the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz. Listen to a few of these interviews.
So I'm here, and it's about almost noon. I'm talking with
Nipples.
And with one anonymous report. What happened earlier today? You say there were five cars here?
There were five cars here. They were looking at a type car.
And she means five police cars, and you'll hear that as we continue.
I imagine the car is put the A-Tac car into the A-Tac that has original driver.
So tell me, how long ago did the cops just come?
Hour.
And how many were there?
Five cars.
And what did they do when they got here?
Harasses.
And what form did the harassment take?
Threatened to take you to jail. Write tickets.
Coerced.
Basically just coerced.
Did you get any citations?
There's some people did.
What for? Do you know?
Probably trespassing, or interfering with a police officer, or failing to take their order.
And what were they ordering people to do?
Just go. You can't be here. You're blocking the sidewalk. This, that, and the other.
All right. And you say this happens frequently up here.
Yeah.
And you agree?
More than I'd like to see.
And
more than I think is constitutional. Well, more than I know is constitutional, that's for sure. They're breaking everybody's.
How many times do you say it happened today? Just once?
Today?
Yeah.
No, I mean, they hang out here every morning from anywhere from like 7 in the morning till 9, 10, and they won't even split. They'll just stay here and just keep messing with people.
And
I mean, I grant you, there's kind of a mess sometimes,
right.
And I can see a little bit of their point, there's businesses around here, but they don't need to go to the extreme that they go to.
Take it. Now, this morning you say a typical one or two squad cod cars waiting in the morning, and then five later show up this morning. Is that what happened?
Yeah. And then the shelter throws me out and destroys everything I got.
How long ago was that?
A week ago.
And what was destroyed? What of your property was destroyed?
Everything. I mean, everything I owned. It was my phone, my prescriptions, my art supplies, my artwork, you name it, my jewelry. And it got destroyed.
Where was the property when they took it?
It was inside the shelter, inside the loft, where I was staying.
And what was their pretext or reason for telling you to leave and or taking your property?
I had a knife in my drawer, and I had a couple roaches.
And when this happened, about a week ago, you say?
About a week ago.
How long had you been in the Poli loft?
3 months, 4 months.
And what was your sense? I mean, had this been an issue before, or had you simply not come up before?
It had been an issue once before, the weed, Knives hadn't been. I'd worn them around there, Nobody ever said anything.
And what's your sense as to why this happened at this time?
The lady that ran it didn't like me.
Her name is?
Erin. Evan. Evan.
And you've been out here since for the last week.
Yeah.
You want to give your name?
John.
Yep. And John, do you want to sign a declaration of the effect that you lost property?
That'd be nice.
Okay, the woman to talk to about that is this woman here. He lost property. You got any declaration forms, or do you want to make a do you have a?
I didn't bring the things, but if you can take an oral declaration right now, if you could say your name and spell it out for us.
John Frederick Ferg, J-O-H-N, F-R-E-D-R-I-C-K-V-U-R-K-E.
Okay, and then do we have permission to sign the declaration with what you're saying on
it? Yes, you do.
Okay, did you give him information, tell us about what happened and what you lost?
Yeah,
I
got thrown out of Holly's loft for, they said, weapons and drugs. I had roaches in my drawer, some CBD ointment in my drawer.
So was your medical marijuana.
Oh, I interrupted that brief colloquy with John, who was reporting his property was taken from the Homeless Lack of Services Center's Holly Loft, because Kevin Allen's sister just called in, and she will be calling me back to give her analysis of how things, well, her sense of outrage about what happened, actually, is the impression I got. But we'll let her speak for herself when she calls. What John was saying, the man whose property, according to his account, was taken by the Homeless Lack of Services Center, he, of course, was initially, we were talking to him about property being taken by police on the sidewalk of people who essentially have no place to go. But he's talking about an additional problem that people face when they go to these funded poverty pimp centers like the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which is the Coral Street sort of homeless industrial complex, which is, you know, increasingly turned into a more prison-like environment in the last few years, thanks to pressure from groups like Take Back Santa Cruz and a cowardly response by the Santa Cruz City Council under the leadership of the various people that I've previously described, Matthews, Terrazas, Robinson, Bryant, Rochelle, and even people who claim to be big supporters of the homeless, like Don Lane and Micah Posner, who went along with a lot of this stuff or made feeble protests and didn't want to, should we say, waste their political capital by standing up against these things when they happened, as they could have done in a strong way, as somebody like Drew Glover is doing now, and of course being punished for it with a recall action. And just a kind of a quick note on that, as a sort of a sidelight, he and Councilmember Chris Crone, and I'm not buddies with either of these guys. I have the least disrespect, and I would say probably the most respect for Drew Glover, because he has been fairly open in some things, though not in all things. And I've talked about that in the past, and I'll probably talk about it later in this broadcast. Specifically championed the obvious, the need for emergency encampments. Well, I think he calls them transitional campgrounds, which is, of course, horseshit, because they're not transitioning to anything. There's no housing to transition to, as I endlessly repeat on this show. His focus has been on decriminalizing the homeless. He now leads the Public Safety Committee, and there is a meeting of the Public Safety Committee under his chairmanship coming up Monday after next. And I'm not expecting great things or even little things of this committee, but he is often willing to be outspoken at City Council about the repressive procedures being used there by Mayor Martine Watkins, and he's less outspoken in criticizing the city staff, which I regret, because I think it's really the city staff that is the iron fist with behind the velvet mittens, so to speak. But nonetheless, and Crone, council members Glover and Crone, there were apparently two failed recall petitions that were failed, but they had some defective signatures. You need 20 signatures, and they didn't have all the signatures. So then, according to an email I received this morning, I think it was from Chris Crone himself. The city clerk has informed him that there has been a successful petition for recall filed. That doesn't mean there's going to be a recall, not at all. But it means that they will now begin gathering signatures to have a recall election and pull these two guys out of office and put in their place some of the standard Neanderthals that roam the city council chambers. My apologies to Neanderthals. They were probably much better in their social relations than these class-based people are. News update that apparently the recall petition has begun to be circulated. And there was some discussion at our Huff and Conscience in Action meeting about not making a big deal about it because, strategically speaking, you don't want to make a hubbub so that people who haven't seen the recall petition would say, at least they'd require an explanation, or if there is already a hubbub, so the argument goes, and I don't really buy it, there would be more tendency to sign the petition because there's already some controversy. This is the same argument that I kind of hear Drew Glover, I don't know if he's using this argument, but it strikes me that the kind of argument that he makes when he doesn't want to talk about an investigation that is happening to him by some secret agency. He actually gave you the name of the lawyer, I think, that was doing this investigation. But the notion that this information should be kept from the community is horseshit, particularly if we're talking about an attack on a city council member. The secrecy that is used as a tool in the hands of those who want to discredit these folks. And they get intimidated already by believing, oh, the city attorney says and the city manager says. When in fact, of course, what these council members need to do is go to independent legal counsel and talk to them about what the actual law requires under these circumstances, not what somebody who is beholden to the existing power structure says the law requires. That's been my view for a long time, and I'm sticking to it. Anyway, let's get back to interviews along the tracks from yesterday, actually. Yesterday around noon.
Yeah, and I had a couple sheath knives that were like so long in the drawer. I don't know whether it makes a difference, but anyway, they threw me out. And then I came back on Saturday to collect my property, and John Forte made a call, and Evan told him, no, he's got to come back on Monday, you know, and I'll issue it. I come back Monday, she's gone. She's there and says, my stuff's gone. This is how she's really sorry, but I just missed the window, and it got destroyed.
And what kind of things were destroyed in that?
Galaxy S8, my art supplies, my every stitch of clothing I own, my jewelry, my watch, my artwork. You know, the art supplies and artwork, I just got them.
Have you been offered any type of other adequate shelter, or is it your knowledge that all the shelters here are full and there's no place for you?
Pretty much full.
And
that's what I'm trying to get into Tent City. That's the best I can do.
Did you try? Did they tell you that they're full?
No, she won't let me on campus.
And, of course, Tent City was the Ross camp, I believe. That's what he's talking about.
Yeah, I'm banned from the campus indefinitely.
So you can't go to 1220 River?
I can go there.
Oh, to the river. Which campus are you banned from?
HSC.
Oh, you're banned from the Homeless Services Center. Well, that makes things difficult.
Of course, the person interviewing John is Alicia Cool, who actually created the Santa Cruz County Homeless Advocates website, which I recommend people go to catch some updates, and also is, of course, one of the organizational plaintiffs in the Desiree Quintero lawsuit, as well as a person who's been very outspoken as an advocate in favor of folks who live in their vehicles and folks who live outside and folks who are behind barbed wire in supposedly non-concentration camp, concentration camps of homeless folks, or actually they're kind of show Potemkin mini villages, which is it's a phrase used to describe these phony, isn't it a pleasant little place, although it doesn't really look that pleasant, although I understand the barbed wire, well, is it coming down or isn't it? When I talked to Eric Kars, who's the manager out there at the 1220 River Street barbed wire boneyard campground, he said some of the barbed wire had come down, but not all of it, and they were still negotiating. And last week I got a letter from Harold Laubach, who's sort of the superior, the Salvation Army boss of all these encampments, or will be until he leaves town. He's reportedly taking a job somewhere else. He said that they were going to be coming down immediately, the barbed wire, or they were consulting with the city manager. I mention it because it's been a matter of, I suppose it's more honesty in advertising to have the barbed wire up, because it really shows you what they're doing. You can't go out, you can't walk out of the camp, you can't walk into the camp, you have to be there by shuttle. The visiting policy is limited, although it has been extended due to protest by activists from the outside. The tents are very close together. They're very hot in the summer, and there was no real rain protection until, I guess, some volunteers came and made some changes in the camp. And now apparently there's some more. There may be some more protection against the rain. And it's very for a very small number of people. It was a show camp set up to argue to the judge in the federal court, Judge Davila, that, there are adequate resources for people being forced out of the 200 to 300 Ross camp, and therefore we can close it down, so don't worry, everything is fine. And the judge bought this bullshit, even though there was contradictory testimony. And that is the basis, by the way, of an appeal that at least some of these some of those who are the litigants, the plaintiffs, are considering filing under the guidance of Anthony Prince, civil rights attorney with the California Union of the Homeless. And they gave notice of that some days ago. I guess it was on Monday or Tuesday. And there was a story in the Santa Cruz Sentinel on the front page about that. I think it was by Jessica York, claiming that an appeal might be followed, essentially challenging the decision of the judge to accept the closing of the Ross camp. And you might say, well, all that's left is a bulldozed field surrounded by a fence guarded by first alarm security, although I'm not sure if they're actually still guarding it. So what's the point? Why a lawsuit now? And the answer is to actually set the record straight. This is part of it. And also to make it more likely that there'll be damages assessed. Although I guess that's a good question that I may want to put to Attorney Anthony Prince, who I may be calling this weekend for the longer Sunday show. And we'll see what he has to say.
So where are you going to stay? Where have you been staying?
I'm going to stay on the street.
Has anything happened to you while you've been staying on the street, like trespass citations or anybody taking your belongings?
I'm pretty quick. Yeah. I'm pretty quick. And I know when to pull the ripcord, get the hell out of Dodge, you know?
Have you been harassed in the past, or have you ever had bad experiences?
Lots of times.
Have you ever been physically assaulted?
I've been shoved. I've been restrained for no reason whatsoever.
Do you feel like that could happen again? Is that one of your fears about being
like
on the street?
It's always like that. That's part of not having your house, being a regular, normal person, I guess, hanging out here. They do stereotype you.
What about the community? Like, do you get a lot of that from the citizens in the community? Like,
I got grabbed by a back 17 gentleman was from, I know for a fact he was back to Santa Cruz.
Say that again, you got grabbed?
Yeah, well, he was taking pictures of my car, and I grabbed for his camera, his phone, and told him, you got to erase that. And when I grabbed for it, he grabbed me and knew all kinds of jujitsu. He tossed me around like a rag doll for a minute. And I got a kick into a lower region, and it stopped him.
And you're saying you think he was from Take Back Santa Cruz?
He was, definitely.
But did he say stuff? Did he say he was from that group?
No, I looked, they got a, there's a website.
And you saw him on the website?
Of stuff from their, you know, about them. Everything they had.
He's definitely on the Facebook website of
Known associate.
Gotcha. Known associate.
Well, I think that's all we need for a declaration. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just for the just for your information, listeners, if you're in a public place, people could take your picture with their phone. You can't legally say they're violating the law by doing that. I mean, you may decide you want to stop them for one reason or another and physically attempt to do that, but in fact, there's no expectation of privacy in public places. Now, if they want to make money off of you and they haven't secured your consent, I believe that's a different story. At least that's what I've always put out, and that's been my understanding. But there's a commonly held belief, and it's not true, that you have a right to tell someone to insist they stop taking your picture or they'd be legally liable and you're protected if you stop them physically. It's not true, I don't think. But if anybody has new information on that, or if you have any comments about anything you hear on this show, run and grab your pencil, and you can write down this phone number, and you can get in touch with me, and we can talk about it. Perhaps even I can interview you for free radio, or you can give me new information that I don't know about. My number is 831-423-4833, and that's 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, and HUFF, of course, is the organization that I work for, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and it's also on the web at huffsantacruz.org, where you can find archives of this show dating back to the mid-90s. So go to town if you enjoy this kind of stuff. I keep posting it and probably will continue to do so until goodness knows when. Let's take a musical break.
We recorded this song on October the 6th. Since then, the war has been declared over. If you're like me, you'll remember it like anybody remembers any war. One big drag. A lot of people write songs about wars and government. Very social things. But I think about young guys who were like I was when I was young. I had no more idea about any government or political things or anything. And I think about those kind of young guys now who all of a sudden somebody comes up and they're very law-abiding. So if somebody says go, they don't ask any questions, they just go. And I can remember not too long ago seeing a young guy with his right arm gone. Just got back. And I asked him how he was doing. He said he was doing all right now, but he had thought he was going to die. He said getting shot at didn't bother him. It was getting shot that shook him up. And I tried to put myself in his position. Maybe he cried. Maybe he said, to my mother. Tell her to tell her to tell her to tell her pain. get much older.
Song, I Can't Write Left-Handed, about the Vietnam murders war that U.S. government perpetrated on the Vietnamese people, kind of following up on the French and the Japanese. All you imperialists, get in line. Here's a little more from yesterday's incidents at the, the aftermath of police harassment, at least as it was described by several of the people there, at the railroad tracks along Coral Street. Sorry.
What did you see?
I saw five.
What's your name?
Billy J. Thompson, the third.
About what time did it happen, Billy?
About a half hour ago.
And what did you see, if anything?
I saw a waste of taxpayer dollars.
And what actions did you see?
I saw the cops starting to do their job fast or whatever, you know, up to par, but it seemed like they had way too many police there.
What exactly were they doing?
I think they were doing their job, I'm guessing. I didn't want to get too close because I know that if
you were at a distance?
Yeah, because they don't like it if you look at them too close, because then all of a sudden they...
How far away were you?
Approximately 100 feet.
Okay. Thank you, man. We'll be talking with...
No problem. Nice to talk to you.
Any mind if I play this on free radio?
No problem.
Anything you see that you'd like to say? It's not compulsory.
I think it was a lot better off the way it was. It's in city where, I don't know, I've gotten 3 tickets already. The first week out, I got 3 tickets, and I don't know what I'm really going to even do with that, because, I'm not going to.
Of course, by Tent City again, he pretty surely meant Ross Kemp.
So just put myself up front without some certainty of some sort that I'm not going to get hemmed up for any amount of period.
What's your name, if you want to say?
My name's Shannon.
And if we were to look for your tickets online, where would we find it, under what name?
William Shannon.
How do you spell it?
I think I might even have...
W-I-L-L.
I-L-L-I-L-I.
Well, William. And Shannon, how do you spell Shannon?
S-H-A-N-I-N.
And Shannon, sorry about that.
Lasky is L-A-S-K-E-Y.
Okay, and did you lose any property in any of these tickets?
And just a quick note here, one of the things that with the city council, I guess it was the city attorney, or maybe it was the city manager, or possibly the police chief when he was testifying before city council, said was that the Boise versus Martin federal court decision that overturned the sleeping bans throughout the nine western states, the camping ordinances, given the fact that there's inadequate shelter, specifically made it clear you cannot give someone a citation simply for being homeless on public property under these laws. You have to, that it simply, then that's something that the police chief, in essence, suggested that they weren't going to be doing. But, of course, it sounds like people are getting tickets anyway, and we, those of us concerned about this ongoing issue for years, or decades even, because giving people tickets because they are outside sleeping when they have no place to sleep is really very abusive, futile, expensive. One can apply a couple of other adjectives to it, but it's just a stupid public policy. But it also serves the purpose of creating a criminal class of people and frightening people who are on the edge of homelessness through the rent situation to, keep working twice as hard at twice as many jobs and or else, you know, move out of town to a cheaper place if they can find it, although a person's family connections may be here, a person's life may be here. A person, instead, this is being done because of the very conscious gentrification of the area and the creation of phony property values for the enrichment of a few people.
I don't really think I did.
What were the tickets for? Do you remember?
They were trespassing.
Where were you supposedly trespassing?
Spot behind the storage facility where the cul-de-sac is across the street where the bike... The Mormon Center.
Ah, yes. Okay.
And I saw it, and it looked depressing, and the Mormon Center, there was probably about 30 tents, and I did the math myself. I said 30 tents, and there's got to be more than 30 people that are homeless in Santa Cruz. So I figured, where are the other 1,000 people or something, you know? And I don't know where they're at, but I went
fuck over the place.
Wish them all good luck.
You know? You have a phone contact or an email contact?
I don't.
How about you, Billy?
I do. Yeah. Not personally, but you can leave a message for my sisters.
I'll take that off.
So back in 2006, there was a key decision down in Los Angeles, the Jones decision, which we hoped would lead to a broader ruling, but instead was settled, and I think it was either depublished or some such thing. So it only referred to Los Angeles and not to the rest of the Ninth District or the broader California area. It was a decision that the settlement said essentially there could be no ticketed people in the Los Angeles area between the nighttime hours. I think it was, I don't know, something like 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., provided people were 10 feet away from a business entrance until the city had built 1,200 affordable housing units. And they recently claimed that they had built those. This was, of course, 13 years later. And therefore, they could start ticketing people at will. Well, there's a story. Here's a story from May 29th. LA agrees to let homeless people keep Skid Row property. Some in the downtown aren't happy. In a pivotal legal settlement, the city of Los Angeles has agreed they won't put a ceiling on the total amount of property that homeless people can keep on Skid Row, but will throw away sofas, refrigerators, and other large items crowding the squalid 50-block area of downtown. The agreement released Wednesday and reached after months of closed-door negotiations. I'm going to leave off this article that I've been reading from the L.A. Times because I just got a call from Carrie Patrick. Have I got your name right, Carrie?
Yes.
And you are the sister of Kevin Allen, correct?
Yes, my maiden name is Allen. I'm his only sibling.
And tell me a little bit about him.
Kevin was brilliant. He was 2.5 years younger than me, and he was able to do my algebra before I could figure it out. He taught me how to do physics, even though I'd been consistently going to school. I'd graduated from Catholic high school and gone to college, and he didn't even finish high school, but he could tutor me in physics without ever having taken it. He had a natural understanding for science and math. He was absolutely brilliant, but even though he was never officially diagnosed, I do believe that he shared the same mental illness that my father suffered from.
And what was that?
Bipolar. Like severe bipolar with delusions.
And were you both raised in Santa Cruz, or how long were you?
I grew up in San Jose.
And is that where you live now, or is that where you live now?
That is where I live now.
But he, of course, was, you know, he fell here
last
in Santa
year.
Cruz. How long has he been here? Do you know?
Over on that side of the hill more often when we stopped giving him money and we're trying to stop enabling. My grandfather continued to enable him, and my grandfather lived in Aptos up until his death in December.
And
I brought my brother over there. I'm not exactly sure at what point that was, but probably in the last, 8 to 10 years.
And we've read some of the comments, and I talked to you about this earlier, that, you know, have been posted online by folks who are, and I'm one of them, critics of the Santa Cruz Police Department for a variety of reasons, mostly from my perspective as to how they treat homeless people. But you had some comments specifically about how Kevin was treated. Now, you, of course, weren't there at the scene of the accident, and, of course, you... But you still had some thoughts about that.
Well, I mean, I read the same press release everybody else did. And I know that they all knew him there. All the police, they knew him by name. He was a regular drunken public offender. I'm not going to deny the fact that he was, an alcoholic, real bad, for years. And that's a lot of people become bad alcoholics to treat mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they just said, oh, it's just Kevin, he's just drunk again, which I'm sure he was, but that wasn't why they were called. They weren't called for any kind of disturbance or that he was causing issues. They were called because he fell. And I feel since he obviously died of whatever injuries he had, that they did not properly check him due to the fall before just hauling him off to jail.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, you went further into this issue by contacting Police Chief Andy Mills.
I don't remember his name because he wasn't very nice to me, but yes, I talked to him on the phone.
And when did you talk to him, and what? Tell us about that conversation.
I think I talked to him Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
I found out about my brother's death Sunday afternoon. He was completely unapologetic. He had nothing to say of my condolences. I'm so sorry. We're looking into this. It was not that tone at all. I said, I feel like he didn't get checked before they decided to jail him. And he said, how do you know they didn't check him? That was his only response.
Did he offer to send you a police report?
No, he didn't offer to send me anything. I demanded it, and he has not given me a single phone call since then.
Mm-hmm.
I told him I want to know every detail as they learn it. Please keep in contact. and not a word.
I would suggest that you send a Public Records Act request to the Santa Cruz Police Department specifically. And if you want to email me, I can show you. It's not very hard to do. It's a pretty simple request. Please send me a copy of the officer's reports on the death of my brother, you know, Kevin Allen. Any medical reports, any witness reports from the scene, and anything that the police department has on this issue. Plus, you probably might want to get a copy of a previous arrest to see if there was a pattern of harassment against Kevin. Although, you know, yes, it's illegal to be drunk in public. But drunk in public is an interesting charge. It's only applicable to someone if they can't take care of themselves or if they're causing a disturbance. The fact that someone is intoxicated is not a basis for a charge. And police have used that charge in the past, particularly against poor people that they don't want around, or that maybe somebody else doesn't want around and has called them for that purpose, to get rid of the person or to get them off the streets or to, you know, take them to a drunk tank. But they're not supposed to unless the person isn't able to take care of themselves. At least that's my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would appreciate that information if you could email that to me. That's good advice.
Yeah, let me give you my email if you got a pencil. And if you email me, then I can get your email by your email to me, and we can do it that way.
Okay.
Tell me when you
get it. What is this?
It's R. Norse, R-N-O-R-S-E, R. Norse. And then the number 3@hotmail.com.
Okay.
Yeah, just send me an email and I'll, you know, I'll kind of summarize what I just said again in the email. And, you know, I'll show you what I do when I attempt to get information. And, you know, you might not be successful because they can be pretty closed-mouthed about it. But you clearly have a legitimate interest. And I think the public has a legitimate interest in knowing this stuff.
I mean, my brother's situation was going to change in a couple of weeks.
Tell
he had
me.
Inherited a large amount of money from my grandfather, and he was about to get that. Now, whether he would have made good on his life with that or not is yet to be, will never be determined, right? Mm-hmm. But he never even got the chance.
Now, how old was
that
he when
he... That upsets me the most.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
I said that's what upsets me the most about this.
Ah, yes. And how old was Kevin when he died?
40.
Anything else you want to say about him that, you know, you think either you felt or you think people should know about him?
You know, honestly, I haven't had great experiences with him over the last 20 years, considering his situation. So I think other people probably have, you know, even a better understanding of who he really was than I do at the end. But from what I remember of the good days, I mean, he was a really smart, amusing, just great guy. He just lost his way in life like many of us do, but he was never a bad person.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any of your friends or his friends or his acquaintances contact you about this death and the police treatment of him?
Some people have responded to my post on the Homeless Advocate site, or the Homeless Advocate group page on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. That's probably the Santa Cruz County Homeless Advocates.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I was looking for your post there. I couldn't find it, but I did find it, as mentioned, on that Santa Cruz Indie Media page that we talked about earlier. By the way, that's where, if you're listening, listeners, you can find Carrie's statement there, and you can also find some other thoughts from people who are saying the obvious. You know, why didn't they take this guy to the hospital instead of the jail? I mean, that's, you know, oh, he's just a piece of scum. You can just, you know, dump him in jail because he's, you know, he's just an alcoholic. You know, who cares? And that, unfortunately, I think, can be the ongoing meme here in Santa Cruz as to poor people who are on the streets, particularly people who have disabilities of different kinds.
Mm-hmm. Well, mental illness in general is a really huge issue everywhere, right? Especially in the homeless population. You either can't afford to get medicated or are undiagnosed and use alcohol and drugs to medicate. It's a huge problem.
And it's stressful outside. I mean, it creates mental health problems when you're outside, I think.
Yeah, that too. I mean, it's just a compounding issue all over the place, right?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I appreciate your calling, and I also think that I'd like to know if the good Chief Andy Mills or whoever is handling the records there gets back to you. And it's always good to create a paper trail for this stuff so that, you know, they can always claim, oh, we forgot about the phone call, oh, we don't remember that. But when you have the email record, you asked for it and they didn't give it to you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that.
Oh, you know what? One more thing I'd like to mention, which I forgot to mention about my brother.
Sure.
He has a son. His son is 20 years old.
Hmm.
And this kid obviously didn't get to have much of a relationship with his father due to the circumstances. But he was always hopeful, too, that this might turn around. And now he'll never get the chance to know his dad.
Hmm. And have you heard from him after this incident, or...?
I haven't talked to him directly. I've talked to his mother.
Huh. How did she feel about this, or if you want to say?
You know, we always knew that Kevin's end was probably going to come early. I just feel like this was not his fault, necessarily. Like, it didn't have to go this way.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to die in this situation. Wasn't a drug overdose. You know, his health didn't fail naturally.
Is there any talk about a lawsuit by family members about a wrongful death here by mistreatment by the Santa Cruz police and or the jail?
If I have a lawyer, if there's any stitch of evidence that this was handled improperly and against protocol, I will try to find, but I've already contacted a lawyer that said we don't touch law enforcement because their blanket of liability is huge.
Mm-hmm. This is in San Jose or in Santa Cruz you talked about?
No, it was in Santa Cruz.
Often you have to go out of town to get a lawyer to deal with somebody in Santa Cruz. And of course, it can be expensive unless you get some sort of contingency thing. And that, of course, depends on your getting, as you say, some kind of evidence or indication, or at least evidence that they're indication they're concealing evidence, maybe, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to try just to get more money for his son. But we'll see.
Well, there's apparently some money around if he inherited some, so maybe...
Oh, yes, but... if somebody caused the death of my brother, I'm going to make sure they pay.
Hey, Carrie, thank you very much for taking the time, and keep it up and keep us advised as to what's happening, and I'll pass on the word to the people who listen to me.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll see what becomes of that. I was before reading a story about L.A. and the settlement, and I'll continue reading that. In a pivotal legal settlement, the city of Los Angeles has agreed that it won't put a ceiling on the total amount of property that homeless people can keep on Skid Row, but will throw away sofas, refrigerators, and other large items crowding the squalid 50-block area of downtown. Of course, the inference there is people have no right to be in this area along with whatever life-sustaining stuff they have, but people inside houses have a right to amass as much crap as they want, provided they keep it behind closed doors. It's always seemed a pretty nasty set of equations to me that doesn't sound particularly fair. And it also really demeans and dehumanizes the human element. Also, this settlement originally was citywide. It wasn't just about Skid Row. So that interests me that it seems to now be restricted to the Skid Row area where apparently they were seizing people's property, which is always a standard way that police use to remove people, at least temporarily, from an area. But, of course, because people have to be somewhere, they usually show up, if not there, then somewhere else. And the same issues arise. People need a place to lie down. They need something to cover themselves up with. They need something to store their meager possessions in or whatever. Anyway, continuing the story, the agreement released Wednesday and reached after months of closed-door negotiations applies only to Skid Row and adjoining streets, covers the area bounded by 2nd Street on the north, 8th Street on the south, Spring Street on the west, and Alameda Street on the east. And that's all kind of within the 101 Highway 10 square or quadrilateral. Skid Row is a small area in downtown Santa Cruz. It looks like it's about half a mile by half a mile wide. It's, however, they, of course, they're obviously probably trying to revamp it and gentrify it. I don't know if that's true, but it's often the case with such homeless removal attempts. It's a heavily, it involves heavily traveled commercial streets with a high concentration of shops, restaurants, and pedestrian activity. Under the settlement terms, the city will have the authority to seize and destroy contraband, hazardous materials, or rat-infested property that threatens public health and safety, as well as so-called bulky items, pallets, refrigerators, couches, or other types of furniture. Well, good luck lying on the sidewalk. But other possessions seized during arrests or encampment cleanups must be segregated, clearly marked, and stored for 90 days in a Skid Row warehouse. Medication and other critical items must be available to be returned within 24 hours. But think that would be the case in Santa Cruz, too, not because a court has said so, but because that's the state law, which, of course, the Santa Cruz Rangers, now under the jurisdiction of Andy Mills Police Department, have been supposed to have been following for the last 20 years, but have not been. I remember chatting with John Wallace, previous bad boy of the Santa Cruz Rangers, Parks and Rec Rangers, 15 years ago. He was quite candid about, we throw away the property. And at that time, we started a lawsuit. We were gathering information about the sleeping ban and its impacts on poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz. We never took that lawsuit much further than the preliminary stages. We had problems with the attorneys who were had it really pretty low on their list of priorities, unfortunately, and were always doing other things. And the activists who were doing most of the legwork eventually got tired of waiting for the attorneys and just went on to their more direct forms of protest. And eventually society, or at least the constitutional courts, insofar as there are such things as constitutional courts, of course there aren't really. You have a system of law that is badly skewed in favor of the rich, but the Boise decision, Boise versus Martin decision, is a clear decision about, you can't arrest people for sleeping when they have no legal place to sleep just because they're sleeping on public property. Anyway, continuing with this story, the city also agreed to give better notice of upcoming cleanups and to pay plaintiffs $645,000 in attorney's fees, legal costs, and damages. And it always seems that's the main kicker and the price tag on these things. Money gets paid to attorneys, maybe some money to individual plaintiffs, but the practices tend to continue. Now, I haven't really got a good estimation of how far police have backed off in Los Angeles and in San Diego as well over the last 15 years because of the Jones and Spencer settlements. Those are the Spencer settlement was the equivalent settlement in San Diego. But I understand there was some back off, at least, but I don't have a clear sense of exactly how much. The settlement will be in effect for 3 years. That's probably until, I guess, 2022. The case, Carl Mitchell versus et al. Versus the City of Los Angeles, marks a critical flex point in LA's long struggle to balance homeless people's property rights against the welfare and quality of life of the whole community. Or rather, I guess, the get the fuck out of our town. These streets are made for our commercial activities, going to and from buying knickknacks, commercial items, and other things that we want to display. I don't really know what the nature of the shops are in the downtown Skid Row area, but a lot of commercial activity has to do with making profit and not meeting human needs. Because the lawsuit filed in 2016 only targeted a specific geographic area of downtown L.A., the settlement sets a different standard than the rest of the city, where authorities have set a limit on how much property that homeless people can store in the streets to what can fit in a 60-gallon container. Now, we've talked to Wes White of Salinas, and there's a similar kind of prohibition in Salinas requiring people to pack all their stuff up during the day and move it around, although they can sleep at night. And so something similar has happened. I think it's within a three-foot square area in Berkeley. There's a law that was passed by the so-called Progressive City Council that has a similar kind of restriction. Santa Cruz, well, we don't need laws in Santa Cruz. We have the Santa Cruz Police Department, who kind of does what Andy Mills decides they're going to do, even if it outrages the Take Back Santa Cruz people, and that's sometimes good, because it was through Mills and former Parks and Rec Director Mauro Garcia that in 2017, in the fall, we actually had San Lorenzo Park opened up to a homeless encampment, partially because of a hepatitis A outbreak in San Diego and the fears that something similar would happen here. Why these same geniuses who created this don't think that the destruction of the Ross Camp and the elimination of all the sanitation facilities, the porta potties, the wash stations, and so forth, the trash cans that were there, and they haven't been replaced anywhere else that I'm aware of, isn't going to lead to exactly the same health crisis again in Santa Cruz? I don't know. But the bigotry and the get that Ross Camp people out of here, we don't want to see those tents from the highway cry, is apparently so intense and so intimidating to the city council and the city council staff that the true health and safety of the city is ignored. Forget about the rights of the homeless people. It's just even the health and safety of the broader community. Civil rights attorneys, the story continues, believe that the 60-gallon limit is unconstitutional, and the settlement states that the parties do not waive future challenges over enforcement under any law, state, or federal. The lawsuit, known as the Mitchell case, accused the city of using street cleanups and minor arrests as a pretext to seize and destroy homeless people's property on Skid Row, where more than 2,000 people sleep in tents and lean-tos in the largest concentration of encampments in the country. How the agreement will affect Skid Row's sprawling camps is unclear. The city has limited storage capacity for homeless people's goods, and it spent $34 million last year on camp cleanups, that is, camp destructions, I would suspect, citywide, without making an appreciable difference in Skid Row's sordid conditions. Sanitation officials had said at a public hearing that the sofas, refrigerators, and other big items were their biggest worry. Actually, I suspect it's the presence of homeless people that they're really after. Homeless advocates said the settlement would force a more humane response to the rolling crisis on Skid Row. It's good to know people's right to property is going to be protected, said General Dogon of the Santa Cruz Community Action Network, a Skid Row anti-poverty group and a plaintiff in the case. Oh, he's optimistic. Advocate and civil rights attorney Carol Sobel called the settlement an important first step, but added that what we want most of all is for the city to come up with a plan that addresses the needs of everyone, including those experiencing homelessness. A spokesman for City Attorney Mike Fenner, or Fuhr, who negotiated the settlement with lawyers for homeless individuals and broad advocacy groups, said that it, quote, provides the city the authority and flexibility it needs to address health and safety issues related to homelessness. Or should I say, blah, 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 blah. Sounds a little like our own retiring city attorney or assistant city attorney, Reed Galagly, who, by the way, today is supposedly, this is his day for resigning from the city after his smear campaign against council member Drew Glover at the courts. And, of course, the smear campaign against Glover and Crone continues, but that's how it is. But Jessica Lall, a story writer writes, chief executive of the Central City Association, a downtown-based business group that fiercely fought the agreement, said it keeps in place rules that have made it difficult for the city to clean up Skid Row and address homelessness. Or actually eliminate homeless people is what she I think she really means, but doesn't want to say. Because there are no limits, she says, on the amount of things that can exist on the sidewalk, it is hard to determine what is someone's belongings and what is trash, said Lal. I guess you could ask them. Adding that her group's board of directors will consider a possible legal challenge. It's hard for sanitation workers to determine if something is a public health concern if it's buried in a pile of stuff. Nick Prevevich, who lives in a Spring Street condominium, said the settlement will simply expand the boundaries of Skid Row. We have rats. I've seen them coming in and out of tents, he said. What's going to happen is a proliferation of really, really serious health problems. But I don't think he's too concerned about the health of the homeless people there. Alan Komisar, a spokesman for Mayor Eric Garcetti in Los Angeles, called the agreement the outcome of several unfortunate options, but added, it's time we break the cycle of litigation that keeps us from helping people in need. And actually, the cycle of litigation is one of the few things that actually addresses people in need by letting them keep their own property or somewhat deterring police from seizing it. So, for example, here in Santa Cruz, we stopped the eviction of the Ross camp for a week with a lawsuit. And the Boise versus Martin lawsuit, it certainly hasn't stopped the police from issuing tickets, but they've had to change over to trespassing tickets and being in a closed area tickets and disobeying a police order tickets from camping and sleeping tickets. And that has, it has some impact. Not much, but some. For decades, the city has been entangled in litigation, that's the Los Angeles, over camp sweeps and property seizures on Skid Row. In April 2016, U.S. District Judge S. James Otero ordered the city to stop taking and destroying homeless people's possessions on Skid Row unless they threatened health and safety, and later turned down the city's request to set volume property limits. In a series of closed-door sessions, Fuhr, city attorney, recommended that the L.A. City Council settle the case. Downtown business owners and residents packed the council chambers, demanding that the city take the case to trial. They argued Skid Row's squalid camps hurt homeless people as much as those forced to work, live, or pass by the trash-filled district. And of course, this was the same phony argument used by the people who wanted to eliminate Ross Camp, and used by the city in their argument about public health and safety at the Ross camp. I think they were arguing fire danger and question. No evidence of sickness, but they had four cases of people who had died over a six-month period, which was about the same rate as people elsewhere in the city. And there were other many instances, or a number of instances, I don't know how many, of people who were saved from overdoses by the fact that they had a community nearby within the camp that helped each other, and also that people from the broader community had a place to go to deliver life-sustaining services, things like food, water, and Narcan and other things that were necessary, toiletries, but that you can't really normally get to people spread out and dispersed throughout the city, at least not with the same efficiency. Okay, the downtown owners and residents argued that Skid Row in L.A.'s squalid camps hurt homeless people as much as those forced to work, live, or pass by. A group of recovering addicts said billowing tents helped homeless people hide and perpetuate their struggles with alcohol and drug abuse. Well, there are no facilities that are able to deal with alcohol and drug abuse currently in any cities that I'm aware of that deal with the magnitude of the problem. Certainly not in Santa Cruz, and probably not even in Los Angeles, the largest city in the state. In the meantime, a federal court governing the western states, including California, that's the Boise versus Martin decision, ruled last year that cities can't enforce anti-camping laws when shelter capacity is lacking, as it is in Los Angeles. An appeal of the ruling was denied last month. Homeless advocates said the city was wasting money for enforcement and property seizures that should go toward housing or bathrooms, showers, and washing stations to improve conditions in the street. And, of course, the River Street Campground still doesn't have a shower. There still are locked bathrooms in the Loudoun-Nelson. There still are locked bathrooms at City Hall. There's still been no replacement, as I mentioned before, of all the porta-potties and wash stations taken away from the Ross Camp area when Ross Camp was bulldozed over. And, of course, there's no laundry facilities for people, although some individuals like Brent Adams are trying to put together that laundry service. I think they've announced there is something starting there, and there is a once-a-week laundry service for the people, I think, inside the River Street campground, which I will remind you serves, what, 60 people or so out of a homeless population of 1,000 to 2,000 at a cost of, well, last year was between $75,000 and $90,000 a month. Meanwhile, back to L.A., the story continues. In March, the city council in a closed session approved the framework for an agreement, but refused to make public the terms, prompting more protests. What the city may not do is rewrite its laws behind closed doors under the guise of reaching a settlement, a lawyer for the Downtown Central City Association wrote the city attorney in April. And even though they're on the other side, I would agree with them on that. I don't like it when the city council in Santa Cruz goes into closed session on this stuff, as they did when the Ross Camp lawsuit hit the court, or hit the city council, the day they were moving to close the Ross Camp. Councilman Jose Huizar and Joe Buscaino, who opposed the settlement, said it would exacerbate Skid Row's degradation. The settlement establishes a different set of standards that will only perpetuate the public health crisis that already exists in Skid Row, said Buscaino, who represents the harbor area. It sounds like this writer with the L.A. Times is giving a lot of print space to the business community. No surprise. Huizar, whose downtown district includes Skid Row, said the city continues to set policy as a reaction to individual and ongoing lawsuits rather than agreeing to a comprehensive settlement that will move us forward in a proactive path in helping us address our homelessness crisis. Sounds a little like Susie O'Hara at the Santa Cruz City Council. That is to say, these kinds of big words and elaborate talks about comprehensive settlements and a proactive path, a homelessness crisis, without talking about the specific kinds of policies that the police department's using and the particular kinds of property that homeless people are losing, is essentially a verbal camouflage. It's a form of chattering your gums without saying anything. One of the four homeless people who filed suit, Michael Escobedo, 60, died of cancer in October. Two of the plaintiffs are now housed and happy to have their own places, so Bell said. That's the attorney for the homeless. But the lead plaintiff, Carl Mitchell, still lives on Skid Row. Seated on a sagging plastic crate in front of the Hippie Kitchen soup line last week, a Hippie Kitchen apparently is a brand name, or the name of the group, Mitchell repeated the allegations that he made in the lawsuit. The L.A. arrested him for illegal possession of a supermarket shopping cart and took two carts full of his belongings, including medication for his high blood pressure and mental health conditions. He said he was released from LAPD lockup in the early hours of the morning with nothing but a blanket he found in an abandoned cart. Sounds strangely like Santa Cruz. Mitchell said the lawsuit had stopped the harassment on Skid Row, but neither the cleanups, the litigation, nor the millions of dollars spent on Skid Row programs have gotten him off the streets. It takes years to get a place, he said. Mitchell sleeps on a half-inch thick foam mat sandwiched between two billowing tents. It's hard to find a place to squeeze in between the tents. Sounds like Ross Camp, he said. He said he is grateful for the street cleanups and cooperates when he can by moving his things out of the way of the power washers and hazmat teams. But why do they have to take people out with the trash, he asked. Wherever you lay your hat is your home. And if you want to go to this story, which is online at the LA Times, you can also see the stipulated order by the judge in 2016 requiring the city to stop seizing homeless property. Old favorite that satirizes a song from the Book of Mormon, which is a musical, as well as being a mythological or a cult.
Here's the bottom line. We've got to keep our country safe. You look at what's happening. You look at what's happening in Germany. You look at what's happening last night in Sweden. Sweden. Who would believe this? Sweden. They took
Hey, Siri.
I have no f***ing idea.
They took in large numbers. They're having problems like they never thought possible. You look at what's
He just told a lie. Nothing happened last night in Sweden.
Folks, we were left a mess like you wouldn't believe. That mess that I was left by Obama.
You're making things up again, Donald. You're searching the truth again, and you know it. Don't be like Kelly and Donald, because a lie is a lie. You're making things up again, Donald. You're eating the facts and then shitting out fiction. Please just stop doing that, Donald.
Or we're all gonna die.
Mr. President,
go ahead.
Regarding your tiny little baby temper tantrums about the press, or as you call it, fake news, aren't you concerned, sir, that you are undermining the First Amendment?
The public doesn't believe you people anymore. Now, maybe I had something to do with that. I don't know. But they don't believe you. If you were straight and told it like it is, I would be your biggest booster. I would be your biggest fan in the world.
And if I may, what is your response to the headlines claiming that your White House is in total chaos?
There's zero chaos. We are running. This is a fine-tuned machine. I won. I mean, it's story after story after story.
You're rambling endlessly, Donald. You sound like my drunk aunt Suzanne at Thanksgiving. You can't just say what you want, Donald.
You're talking straight out of your hole.
You're making things up again, psycho. You're scaring the shit out of most of the country. With all due respect to you, psycho. I don't think real presidents get their briefings from Fox and Friends, right?
No.
And we're back with my guest, President Donald Trump. Oh, it's so hard to say that. Donald, what about all the accusations continuing to swirl around you and Vladimir Putin? And when are you just going to put the rumors to rest and tell us? Are you guys engaged?
We'll see what happens.
Well, he is very handsome. He's also a cold-blooded killer.
A lot of killers. We got a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent? Does anybody really think that Hillary Clinton would be tougher on Russia than Donald Trump? Does anybody in this room really believe that?
I do.
You're making things up again, Donald. You're eating the facts and then shitting up the nation. You should stop doing that, Donald. Or you're gonna get us all killed. Who would believe a deranged hypocrite? Who would believe a bewitched infernet? They've dumped rationale and Sean Spicer needs Valium.
No.
You're making things up again, Donald.
I own nothing in Russia.
You're making things up again, Donald.
The news is fake.
You're up
we
again,
had a very smooth rollout of the travel ban.
You're making things up again, Donald.
Nobody mentions that Hillary received the questions to the debates.
Sweetie, get over it.
No good.
That, of course, was Randy Rainbow, You're Making Things Up Again, and it's, you know, it's got the usual Russiagate nonsense, as far as I'm concerned, dangerous stuff from the Democrats who don't want to take any responsibility for, you know, putting up a warmonger against a nut in the 2016 elections and still haven't changed their tune on international war and peace issues, really, if you look at even the liberal Democrats. But, hey, it's Randy Rainbow, and he's a lot of fun. Let's jump now to the Red Church and listen to a few voices from there.
I've seen you around before.
You look familiar to me, too. I'm here across from the Red Church. It's around 25 to 6, talking with
Bob.
Bob, you're sitting on your skateboard. You got your rucksack with you, and you're reading Louis L'Amour. I mean, I don't know what else can be doing, but you also, you're holding down two jobs.
Yeah.
What are those? Do you want to say what the jobs are?
Unky Rose Pizza and Friends and Cheese Jam Company.
You look pretty clean cut, kind of a beach guy kind of thing, but you are outside, right?
Yeah.
And do you have to find a new place every night, or have you got a fairly...
Go to the same spot on the levee.
And no hassles?
Not really.
Is that because you are extremely well hidden, or you're paying off the cops?
No, I'm right there on the levee. They just, don't bug me.
How long have you been there?
Since the weather got nice, I was there all last summer, so...
And before that, where were you, if you wanted to say?
I was at the Tent City down... Past the shelter?
Ross Camp?
No. Hell no.
You prefer not... Ross Camp not your favorite?
No, I stayed away from there.
Because of experiences you had or because of stories you heard?
Oh, because I'm a drunk stoner, and they did too much drugs there,
I got you. But you were in another tent city for a while.
Yeah, it was the same one they got down by the bus garage. Down
1220 River.
I think that's what it is.
I think it's the barbed wire.
Yeah,
but I guess they're removing some of the barbed wire.
I don't know. Yeah.
Have you tried to get back in there?
My name's on the list, and it's supposed to be on the list for the loft, but who knows.
And how long have you been in Santa Cruz generally?
This time's going on 7 years.
And you've been outside for most of all of?
7 years, pretty much.
Is that because this is a prudent economic decision, a necessity?
Too expensive for rent, heck, I ain't paying all that expensive price to rent a place when I can stay out here for free,
And when the NIMBYs come to you and say, well, why don't you go to a place where you can afford it?
Okay, sure. Where's that at?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say about anything experiences you've had recently that you think people should know about?
Not that I can think of.
And we've been talking with?
Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
Actually, at the place where the Ross Camp was before?
Yeah.
And how long had you been there?
I stayed in where Tent City was in a bunch of different spots because they kept, telling me, no, you can't be there, no, you can't be there.
How many people were in the Tent City you were with?
Oh, it was just me and Papa John. And then when Papa John went indoors, it was just me and Bobby and Sonny.
Papa John's been around for decades, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, he's in Watsonville.
Well, give him my regards. Say Robert says hello.
I will.
Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
Sidewalk waiting for me is...
Dreamcatcher.
Dreamcatcher, you're lounging about, taking up at least half the sidewalk, shockingly enough. This is a kind of I found you here last week, too, across from the Red Church.
You forgot.
And here's another character who's putting his coffee down. This is a hangout spot for ne'er-do-wells?
Yes, to be to be uninterrupted by the security guard across the street, we come over here to smoke and talk.
You're talking about Sexton Steve, the terror of the Red Church?
Well, he might be the so-called terror of the church, but, we'll just let him think that.
I see.
Yeah.
You don't want to disillusion him.
Well, not with reality, no. But I got a couple of good paintings for you. I got one called The Conductor. I know you'll love. It is so cool. I didn't know if I was going to run into you, but I want to again.
What's been happening with you in the last week? Anything you want to comment on? Anything new and boring, new and exciting? Anything at all?
Yes, I was surrounded by 7 officers the other day on Memorial Day, and they cited me out for crossing Pacific Avenue.
So in other words, because you've been given a court-ordered stay-away order from Pacific Avenue for what?
3 years.
For 3 years, and again, the crime was?
Crossing Pacific Avenue to get to the bathroom.
But the crime for which you were given the stay-away order on Pacific Avenue was?
Camping out, which I've never done.
So you've never camped out. You simply, it was the illusion you were sleeping. They thought you were, but you...
You can't sleep on Pacific. I usually start my night or my day at 10 o'clock at night. That's when I usually get, that's my morning.
So you had numerous camping tickets, and they said, we'll get rid of all these, but you have to agree to stay away from Pacific Avenue over 3 years?
If I wanted to get out early, too, and try to save my car from being towed away, yes, that's what I agreed to, and now I regret it.
And you regret it because?
I didn't save my car, and the frustration of having a girlfriend on Pacific Avenue serving you coffee put me in jail 5 times. And they said, why do you keep coming down here? I go, because I'm in love. They came in Starbucks to the bathroom and got me.
Were you making love in the bathroom or just using the facility?
Well, I could have, because they used to have an employee there before I met Joanne that used to do that with John Valley.
Whatever happened to John Valley? Is he still around?
He's wheelchair ridden, or he might have a lot of money. But that woman that he used to fool around with lives in the trailer park up the way. And every time she sees me to come over to visit the other old lady that I put some food to, she runs me out.
I see. Is this because she's jealous of you, or what's the story?
I don't know.
But you say there were all these police Memorial Day around you on Pacific Avenue.
Yeah.
Was it just because, you know, they wanted to hear your stories? They were excited to get to know you again. Why did they cluster about you?
There wasn't much else to do. And yeah, I'm pretty entertaining. And at the end of the whole thing, the buried rangers, you know, that couple that's married that are rangers, they go, Dreamcatcher, I've never seen anybody as lucky as you. And they walk away because I wasn't getting taken in. It was up to the officer's discretion, which is very nice because I don't act like a fool. I wasn't riding dirty. I know better since the last time. And they cited me out, goes, are you going to get to this one this time? I'm going, yes, because I'm in a tent. My stuff is safe, and I can walk to the courthouse.
Now, you found a campsite. How distant is it from the downtown area?
No. It's at the new campsite with all the tents and everything in the tent city by the Salvation Army.
Oh, hey. We're talking about the 1220 River Street campsite.
Right.
I think we talked about this before, but any reports on that? The 1220 River?
Yes, I can tell you that the bad guys are getting kicked out one by one, you know, and I'm glad of that. I got kicked out for a stove that I, you know, didn't even use, and no paperwork. They don't know how to run a camp yet, but it's not too bad, you know.
So you were one of the bad guys that got kicked out?
I got kicked out from one night.
Okay. So, but you say that...
He's a bad boy.
And people are affirming your badness.
I'm one of the good guys that are gone bad. No. If it's not kid friendly, or, you know, if mom complains, there's no kids there. You know, there's no one under 21.
Santa Cruz, where the animals run the zoo.
Yeah. And there is a certain type of behavior in a campground that, you know, if you're too noisy, you know, you're not going to be welcome. You know, if you want to keep a secret, don't ask for that. And a quiet time is after 10. You can ask for people to be quiet, but do it nicely. But if no one's complaining, you know, I mean, we have some freedoms, but...
When you say other people have been kicked out for bad behavior, what behavior you consider bad or behavior that you think...
Threatening one of the female staff, getting in an actual confrontation or fist fight. Did you load that pipe? Good. Anyway.
And the food is...
You know what? I really count on that dinner they have for me every night, and the breakfast every morning, and the good coffee. They make really good coffee. I'm glad of that, and they have plenty of creamer and sugar.
Any word on the arrival of the showers?
The laundry comes on Wednesday, and there's a shower somewhere that's developing. There's one up behind the Safeway up on Soquel.
But there's no shower that comes to 1220.
No, not yet.
Does that mean the odor at 1220 is getting thicker, or does that mean people go to the River Street, you know, the Coral Street area, or do they dive in the river?
We all shower together, of course. One big solar shower. We all
power.
That's right. We all put on blindfolds. We take off all our clothes, and no one peeks, and we're all happy.
Well, that's interesting. When does this happen so I can bring my camera down there?
It's happening right now all the time.
24 hours.
It's a nudist camp.
No sex allowed?
Oh, there's sex every night. Between these guys that are near us, I can't. Oh, my God, it makes me sick.
Well, you've got to broaden your horizons.
Broaden my horizons?
And we've been talking to that man of deep tolerance.
You know what? Be nice is my slogan. And this is Dreamcatcher. Thank you, Mr. North.
Thank you, sir.
Positive report from 1220 River Street, the Boneyard Campground. There's still some, well, problems. There are obvious problems when you're spending huge amounts of money for a small number of people, as I mentioned before, and you're putting them in essentially a concentration camp situation, which is what it is. However fluffy you want to make it, however, whatever pretty little peace flags you want to put along the barbed wire, which aren't there anymore. They were there during the previous incarnation of the camp, during the last year area, our time. Such things as a minor modification, the clarification of the visitors policy so that people can get visitors there, which they couldn't last year. And there haven't been many people asking to visit, apparently. A week and a half ago that there be a specific posting inside the camp and online to let people both who are in the camp know and people who want to visit in the camp from outside the camp know what was required, which apparently is you have to somehow communicate with the person inside that you want to visit, and you can't really ask if that person lives there because it's confidential, so you have to have some know through some other reason, some other source of information that they're there. You then find that out, and you ask them to put you on a visitor's list, and then you supposedly can just come on in. There's been complaints that there's been a delay of half an hour. That was disputed by a camp master, Eric, who runs the place. He also said that he was surprised to hear that the visiting rules hadn't been posted inside the camp, though they haven't been posted online anywhere either that I know of. I asked him to deal with these issues. He continues to correspond with me regularly. He has been calling me back. He's probably trying to run around and do a variety of things, but it hasn't been done apparently consistently. Even this morning, he acknowledged that there was no such listing posted, a set of rules inside the camp that told people how to get people who are outside to have access, the visitors. And so I've heard him back and said, well, get to it, and who knows, we'll see if he's getting to it. But again, as some activists in the Conscience and Action meeting said yesterday, and perhaps it was the Huff meeting that followed, putting a lot of attention on these procedures for a very small concentration camp or light campground, rather than addressing the broader needs of the homeless community and, you know, denouncing this whole so-called solution, which is really just a cover-up for the abolition of a broader campground that homeless people actually ran to some extent themselves, the Ross Camp, is wrong. It's a mistake. And I agree with the activists who said that at the meeting. Some more from the Red Church, where you can come and go as you please, unless you offend Steve the Sextant by, I don't know, standing on the path around the Red Church or on the grass or possibly, I don't know, trying to actually enjoy your meal in peace while they're bangingly putting away the chairs early from the meal between 6 and 7 on Monday. That hasn't been such a problem, and I got to admit that the last Monday no one shouted at me for standing on the path, but again, I kind of have told Steve the Sextant essentially in my own way to fuck off. If he wants to tell me to leave, that's, you know, something that I'm not going to do. I'm talking to people, I'm interviewing people, and I'm also acting as a model for people and suggesting, you know, you be treated in a human and decent fashion here. You not have to comport yourself as though you're in a prison line. Although that's often the case in these, with these social service providers who seem to be taking the wrong kind of model for their model.
Okay. I'm doing pretty well. I'm trying to get my license so I can be more legal with my vehicle. I'm doing my best.
This is Dread Eye, who's an artist and a guy that I interviewed at some length in past years on Free Radio. He lives in his vehicle. He was a student for a while. Well, he talks about that.
my favorite.
I mean, I still have my Virgin Islands driver's license, but I don't have one with me, and I've been here so long that it's not exactly valid, but I'm trying to say that is, because this is my home, and I'm doing the best I can to be legal, but I'm too poor right now to be legal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I can't afford to go to the courthouse and pay for everything I got to pay. I pay the tickets I got to pay. And I just can't afford to pay. I can't afford to be legal right now. So I'm doing my best to work my way to afford to be legal.
Now, you're in your vehicle. Have you had any hassles for being in your vehicle?
Twice I've got tickets for driving.
Well, I know that last time I saw you, probably I saw you after that, but you may remember at the police station, we confronted Andy Mills to ask him to advise that people should not be getting hassled for parking for less than 72 hours since they're allowed to do that. But sometimes, apparently, neighbors
harass us. We're getting harassed. There's still a level of harassment that hasn't stopped. And I really don't think it's going to anytime soon.
Did that press conference and the publicity that it prompted have any effect on a slowdown in harassment?
I think it did have effect on a slowdown of harassment, but there is still a decent amount of harassment. Thank God they haven't destroyed me and taken my car, but they're not far from it. I'm just trying to do my best to keep everything together.
You yourself are also an artist who spent some time in school recently.
Yes, I've been to college here on art and past, and I'm doing pretty well in that, but I would like to go back to school, but I'm having problems with that right now. But we'll do our best to get that taken care of.
Anything you've seen in the last week you want to comment on?
I got a ticket. No, that was 2 weeks ago. And
what was the ticket for?
Driving without a license and no turn signals. But I got my turn signals on this thing fixed. That only cost me about $400.
On this thing?
Yeah.
And I guess.
Yeah, I still owe them $217.
So did you deal with the ticket?
We wired.
Oh, okay. The wiring inside the.
Well, we'll leave this here for the time being.
And the guy gave him the band.
And thank you, Dretta.
The Red Church.
Listen to the music of Valerie Christie.
Leland Mark, and I live in my car here in Santa Cruz while I'm waiting on my Social Security disability to come through. Anyway, there is some, he seems like a very young guy and on a power trip, and he's always got something negative to say when he sees me, like when I was driving down the road the other day, and he's like, oh, look, that's my dream car right there. It's my dream car, and, you know, I've got a run-down car. It's poor, I know. It doesn't look the best, and he's got something brand new that is, I don't know who bought that for him. Anyway, he's a rich, spoiled little guy, immature and insecure, and he's just kind of being a jerk, and if he sees me parked, he'll be doing something the same thing, you know? It's just kind of like a harassment that I'm not appreciating.
He has no uniform and gun at the
moment. No uniform, no gun, but he's sure ready to call the 911 when if somebody gets angry.
Did you get annoyed with him at some point?
I'm always annoyed with him. He's always annoying on purpose, but I don't do anything about it.
You keep a cool head.
What else can I do? I'm at his mercy. Pretty much, you can harass it. It's legal to harass, I suppose.
And where does this kind of harassment happen?
While I was driving, that was on Front Street, and this is also in the parking lot by the library.
Weird. Interesting.
Yeah. He's just a spoiled little rich kid. Doesn't know what he's doing.
You could offer to trade cars with him.
I think maybe he might be trying to impress his girlfriend.
There you go.
And he just doesn't know what else to do because, that's it.
And we've been talking with?
Mandolin Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Corporation, an LLC.
Okay.
Global worldwide domination.
Very good. Now, who will you be dominating?
The world.
Ah. You are the dominator?
Yes, I will be the dominator.
And are you being dominated much yourself?
No, not at all.
Have you been all right? No hassle?
None. None.
No tickets?
None.
No arrests?
None. I've been good for it.
I'll have to move on to the next person.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no,
Work at it. We've been talking with
St. James.
Thank you, St. James. Any reports from the street?
Not this one.
Thank you. Street reports?
Well, people like to blow up your spot in the woods out by where the river is down there by the path.
Yeah.
By Pogo Nip. I don't know. I think it's a territorial thing. But they're like right behind me, behind this like bush, and it kind of creeped me out a little bit.
We've been talking with Anonymous.
Anonymous. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Fatty.
What's up, Fatty?
Well, not much. Just being fat.
Yeah, well, you don't look too fat to me, buddy.
Not too much food in the streets lately.
Well, here you are in the food line.
Yes, indeed.
Money. Any tickets? Any hassles?
Plenty, actually. I found out I've got 40 tickets from 2016 to now. Also, two different jail sentences that I never actually served.
Here in Santa Cruz?
Yes, 40 tickets since 2016.
And in the last week?
None, actually. I've had none in the last month, actually, luckily.
That's pretty good. Sleeping outside?
Yeah, kind of. I got a fenced in area that I'm stuck behind and kind of doing, guerrilla camping, really.
We'll talk to you more later. We've been talking with
Fatty.
Thanks, Fatty.
Yeah.
Maybe. All right. Fine.
Maybe another time now?
Are you on the air?
Well, we're recording, but again, you're about to eat.
Okay, this is right.
I'm a little too tired to think.
You look tired.
I am tired.
But, you're about to get some food, so that's something, right? you've been doing, which one of those singing as well? No, I'm thinking, you were just listening to the singing.
Oh, no, actually, she was singing, and I urged her to go over and closer to the mic. She has a lovely voice. Really nice tone and nice formula. Very good voice.
Yeah. All right, well, when you're pepped up, we'll come back to you, and maybe you'll have more thoughts for you.
Yes. I'm trying to think. I'm really working hard on more like management levels to make some sense of this.
Quite a task, I gotta tell you.
People are, I think, at least the people I work with at the county are really, I was part of the panel that, yes, my God, we have a voice. Unfortunately, it's just me so far. Everyone who was there working on that commission really wanted to do something and do something, get it right.
Commission being?
The panels that looked at the proposals for the $10 million.
Ah, gotcha. I'll have to talk to you more about this later when we're not in the middle of the line. But we've been listening for the thoughts of
Mary.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
The wind, the answer is blowing in the wind.
Indeed, and blowing down the street. Any reports from the street?
No.
Okay. Any reports from the artist in residence? No. So how's everything going here with you and Steve?
I don't know.
He's right behind you, so don't try to sneak any food out, okay?
Oh, yeah. Okay. This Steve, that's Steve's plate.
No. That's the plate. Rhymes with H.
Plate.
Plate. Yes.
Okay.
Looks like plate, though, I got to tell you.
Okay.
Rhymes with H.
Yeah. Everything's cool right now. So.
And we've been talking with your name again.
Oh, Susan.
Thanks, baby.
In terms of upcoming meetings, jump to another subject. There is apparently a meeting of folks opposing the recall of council members Glover and Crone. Looks like day after tomorrow, Saturday, at the SEIU headquarters on Mission Street at 5 p.m. if you're interested in wandering up there. That's on the corner of Mission and who knows what corner it is, but it's 517B Mission. So if you want to get involved in the anti-recall campaign, check it out at 5 o'clock on Saturday up there at SEIU headquarters. Agenda for next Tuesday's shitty council meeting on the 11th has not yet been posted, so we may look in on it on Sunday when the show returns, or a longer version of it comes at you, 9:30 in the morning, and we'll see if that happens. This is from the jail's food strike and conditions there, although I did get a kind of a teaser from Willow when she was at the LGBTQ, I probably have that wrong, March last Saturday. Picking that up a bit on Sunday again at the next upcoming show. Plus, we're going to be listening in on, first they came for the homeless activists in Berkeley who have continued to survive the occasional crackdowns that are happening in Berkeley with the new anti-homeless laws there about shovel all your property within a 3-foot area or lose it, that has been passed by the progressive Berkeley City Council. Word on the secret, oh-so-secret investigation of Drew Glover, either from him or anybody else in terms of what's actually going on. There is a story in the Good Times for this week about similar investigations into Mauro Garcia, the former police, Parks and Rec guy, I guess you'd say, as well as a few other employees, but the city is being very tight-mouthed about its investigations of its own, both its own employees, but again, as I said before, Glover is not an employee of the city, nor are any of the city council members. And also, the city manager, though he is an employee of the city, since he is such a powerful and really important part of the city bureaucracy, complaints against him need to be open and clear and available for public inspection and available for public hearing. And, of course, that has never been the case. It is not currently the case. And so we're stuck with an unaccountable, untransparent, but very powerful city manager who, along with a reactionary mayor, Martine Watkins, at least reactionary on homeless issues and police issues and I would even say housing issues like renter protections, to essentially ignore election results, ignore the, you would think would be the normal procedures at City Council for getting things on the agenda, which are presumably supported by the council majority, the so-called liberal majority, before Justin Cummings ran into the embraces of Martine Watkins, the mayor. And we see now the sad situation. As usual, it's the powerful staff that needs to be brought under control, and that has yet to be done. And it's up to the community to do it, even against the attacks against Crone and Glover, who haven't really done that much to be attacked for, even on the right. I mean, I guess there really is such arrogance and a demand that there be a sort of party line kept by the city council that involves homeless people, Everything is going fine with the homeless, except there are some malcontents. We don't need any additional shelter except what Susie O'Hara promises will be coming down the road if we play our cards right. We don't have to worry about the mass evictions that are going on all over the place, both with homeless people people who are just renters. Out of mass evictions all over the place is an exaggeration, or maybe it isn't, but again, I don't have the documentation, and we don't have it because no one's documenting it. And so if you're interested in any of these issues, get in touch with me or a tenant organization, which of which there are a few in Santa Cruz. If you give me a call, I will put you in touch with some of these groups. My number is 423-4833. That's for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Get in touch, and maybe we'll get something done. Talk at you again on Sunday.
Mom killed chicken, thought it was dirt. Put on tape with the legs sticking out. You gotta stay with them cool. Gotta stay with them cool. And you can't stay better, no. You gotta stay with them cool. Had a bunch of shreds, back with two. Blind so down, what you gonna do? You gotta stay with them cool. Gotta stay with them cool. Well, you can't stay better, no. You gotta stay with them cool. Had a little girl, her name was Bo. Give a little gift, just took it all. You gotta stay with them cool. Gotta stay with them cool. Well, you can't stay better, no. You gotta stay with them cool. Had a little girl, her name was Bo. Give a little gift, she took it all. She gotta stay with them cool. Stay with them cool. But you can't stay better, no. You gotta stay with them cool.
Uncle Dennis here, welcoming you to From the Cream to the Dregs. We're here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3, also streaming live at www.freakradio.org. From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and 70s, heard every Thursday evening at 8 o'clock right here on Free Radio. So we're going to get right back into the music. We've got lots of stuff coming up. At 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update. After a half hour of environmental news, we'll get right back to the music. We'll finish up around 11 o'clock tonight, and so stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz and enjoy.